You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
When's the last time I saw you?
Too long.
2020 or 21?
2 years ago, I think, to do the podcast episode.
Yeah, you guys came here.
You're a returning favorite.
My man.
Dr. Evan Anton, 6'2", 270 pounds of man muscle. 3-time People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive. Host of the television show Evan Gone Wild. I'm trying to change the name. And the author of Worldwide Vet.
Worldwide Vet.
Wild Vet.
Love the promo, man. Thank you.
You have so many accolades under your name.
Yeah, I got a couple, I guess. Yeah.
TV show host, I think, is the coolest thing that you've done.
Dude, that was a dream come true, man. So that was like a goal of mine since 2006. I was studying abroad in Australia. I knew I wanted to be a vet. And then when I was there, I was like, you know what? I want to help animals like individually, like as a veterinarian. But I'd also like to, you know, do more for wildlife on a different kind of scale and raise awareness about wildlife, teach people about pets and vet medicine and, you know, get people excited about wildlife conservation. And I started filming these like super, super amateur like YouTube educational videos, just going out and catching like lizards and stuff out in the bush in Australia. I got a rental car. I did a study abroad there. I was there for like 6 months. And there's a big gap between your last day of class and finals. You get a month. And so I flew to the other side of the country. I rented a car, lived in it, and I just got like big, you know, those 5-10 gallon jugs of water, a bunch of canned food, and just lived on the road, slept in the car, and just went to all these gorgeous national parks and wildlife reserves, and just looking for wildlife and natural beauty in the country. And but anyways, yeah, long story short, yeah, that was a dream of mine. You know, I did the show in 18. It was like, you know, almost 15 years, you know, that I'd wanted to do that, and it was finally happening. I was like on Animal Planet. Like,
you were the host, Animal Planet, Evan Goes Wild.
Evan Goes Wild, man.
Is that what got you the show, those YouTube videos?
I mean, no, I don't think they had anything to do with it, honestly, but it was like accumulation of things that happened more, you know, closer to the show chronologically. But, you know, yeah, I think in a way, yes, because that's like where like my drive and everything started, but I don't think they saw those videos.
In the show, you got to play with baboons, swim with humpback whales.
Yeah, all of it, man. I mean, baby Asian bear cats, you know, and oh my God, I mean, just so many things, like crocodiles, big cats, like so many of my favorite animals to work with, elephants. Like, it was a trip, dude, every episode. We got to work with some domestics too. Like, one of the craziest ones, we're in Kathmandu, Nepal, and we met up with this guy that rescues like homeless cattle. And he'll go, because people, like, so they're mostly Buddhist there. They don't believe in like humane euthanasia. And so when their cattle aren't really performing for them, they just kind of open the gates and say, you know, go figure it out. And this guy rescues these cattle and has this little ranch reserve thing in the middle of Kathmandu. And we went out and we're on the back of like basically dirt bikes. And one of my favorite moments was being on the back of this dirt bike with a calf, you know, across my lap. And then he's driving it. And then we just rescued it.
Like, you're literally Superman.
Yeah. And we're like, you know, riding out to his place. And oh my God. It was a trip, dude. It was fun.
When you're jumping on a crocodile's back, you're 6'2". How much do you weigh?
I'm like a little over 200 right now.
Are you scared of its turning around and snapping at you?
I mean, I'm aware of it, right? So with crocodiles, it's nice because, honestly, you can, when you have experience with them, you know the range of motion. You know where that mouth can go relative to the body, right?
Right.
And so they do a lot of the side swiping business. And so one of the most important things, if you are going to jump a crocodile and restrain it, is you want to get your hands really right behind those jaws.
Yeah, because a lot of people are asking, because they're trying to jump crocodiles, oh, they listen to this podcast.
Okay, good.
We're a big crocodile community. So
yeah, no, I heard. So yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
any more
so
advice?
When you guys are doing that, the key is. No, I mean, when I do that, like, yeah, the hips and the shoulders, you know, especially really kind of in front of the shoulders by the neck. So I try to sit on the hips and then control behind the neck. And so, yeah, now you guys know how to do it. And then when you get behind the neck, you kind of just gradually work your hands up over the jaws And once you have your hands around the jaws, even on a pretty good size alligator or crocodile, they don't have the strongest opening power. Really strong bite force. So when they bite down.
Are you comfortable and like, okay, I got this at this point? Or are you still like, anything could go wrong at this time? Like, what if he jerks a little too much?
I think the scariest time is actually the initial jump onto the... I say jump. I'm not jumping on the thing, right? But yeah, when you're actually sitting down and grabbing it, that's the scariest moment. And once you have a secure grip around the neck, you know, just behind the jaws there, like once I'm to that point, I'm much more comfortable. But it's that first bit, because sometimes, man, if they really snap, they can really fly themselves around and they can... That can be quite dangerous.
What about when you're leaping off?
The key there is, you know...
Don't be last.
The most dangerous part of the animal, the head, the mouth, is the last thing to let go of, right? So if I'm doing that, I'm keeping my hands on that. I'll sit my body up and then kind of get ready where I'm positioned so I can back away and then back away and take the hands off.
You're crazy.
I love that stuff, man. Like, I love working with them. It's so fun to me. They're such beautiful animals. They can be a real handful, but like to me, it's not scary or something I don't want to do. It's like, when's my next opportunity that I can do that? Because I love it so much.
When I did an episode of Shark Week, we jumped in the water during the...
That's so cool.
Not feeding frenzy, but they were below us.
Were you in the Bahamas or where were you?
We went to Jupiter, Florida.
Dude, Jupiter's awesome for that.
Yes. We learned how to scuba dive here in like Laguna, which was awful.
Yeah.
Because it's so murky and you go down a foot, you can't see in front of you.
It's cold.
Oh, a cat just jumped on you. Then we went down to Jupiter, Florida, and it was worlds above. I wish we did it in the Bahamas, though, because that's what everyone was like. Oh, you didn't get the full experience.
Dude,
like,
I was just there.
And stunning.
Bro, and I've done it a couple times now, but I just got to show you one picture. I don't know if that's like not couth on a podcast, but...
What's the deepest that you've gone?
A little over 30 meters.
Oh, wow.
I'm not advanced, but when I was studying abroad in Australia in 2006, I got like my adventure diver, which is like halfway between open and advanced. And because I wanted to be able to go deep, I was looking into doing this wreck dive that was past your 18 meter or your, 18 meters.
Titanic.
And Australian Titanic. Yeah, Titanic. I literally just posted this. I'm going to show more footage and stuff, but
please.
That's like a 14-something foot tiger shark.
Oh my, guys, there's a video. This is you?
Yes.
That's you?
Yeah.
You're petting a tiger shark on the underbelly. This thing looks like an actual submarine. You're not scared of this?
Oh, dude, they're just big teddy bears, man. And listen, that's specifically these Bahamas tiger sharks. So
they're chill.
They're really used to people. They've seen so many people. Like, people go down there all the time. Like, the first time I went, we just went down. We'd bring a bait crate like that has like chum and whatnot in it. We weren't feeding or anything. And just the smell just keeps them interested. And once you're down there and you're under the water, they can see you a lot better. They can see, like, listen, this isn't on the menu. I'm not interested in eating you. And we saw dozens of sharks. You know, at the most we saw it a single time was seven or I think eight sharks, actually.
All the size?
Various sizes, anywhere from 10 to that, 10 feet to that size.
You can't do that with a bull shark, though, no?
Not quite like this, because they're a bit more skittish. And it's not because the bull shark's more likely to attack you when you're underwater, but they're just more skittish. But for any of these sharks, when you're submerged and you're not making noise at the surface and they're not sure what it is and they're not going to... It's just so rare to get bit. It can happen, but it's very rare to get bit. But these guys, they just want to eat little fish scraps, you know? So they don't look at you as food. So when this guy's swimming by me, these tiger sharks are apex predators in that area. They really don't have anything to be afraid of. And so when they swim by you, they're curious. They'll come right. I mean, they'll bump you right in the face if you're not. So sometimes you have to redirect them and just kind of like just take their little head and just show them a new direction to go.
Yeah, they taught us that. The instructors made me feel so safe because they were like four girls going down there directing all the sharks and taking care of us.
Dude, that's awesome. So did you see bulls?
We saw lemons and nurse.
Yeah. And reef sharks, maybe.
Huh?
Reef sharks.
Great. Yeah, and reef sharks.
Yeah. Those lemons are fun too, though, right?
Yeah.
They're a nice size. It's not a small shark.
It was really cool being in there. Would I do it again? No.
No?
I already did it once. Would. I mean, maybe if the opportunity was there.
Bro, would you do tiger sharks?
If I was with you.
You would love it.
Yeah.
Really. Oh, bro, when you get down there, it's like 30 feet. It's a shallow dive. So you're really not that deep. You're on a sandbar. And you just... I take my fins off and just sit on my knees.
I'll take my mask off. I don't care.
I'll just take them off and just, because you're really not swimming around. It's like the most mellow dive. It's, you know, we're in like a 3-2 wetsuit. So it's you want to have something on, but it's not that cold. It's comfortable once you're in there. And God, dude, it's just incredible, dude. And your tank can last like almost 2 hours if on some of those shallower, more shallow, because you're really not that deep. So the air is not that, you know, under that much pressure. And
right.
Oh my God, it's incredible, dude. It's my, I've dove all over the world, you know. And I think that's, I mean, that's for sure my favorite, like hands down.
Let's dive into the jungle.
Let's do, man.
You do silverback gorillas as well?
I've not done like personal hands-on vet care with gorillas.
I thought you saved them or something.
I mean, so, okay. So like I've definitely like worked with, you know, been in places and like helped raise, you know, wildlife conservation awareness for them and visited them in the wild. But no, I've not, like, I can't say I've personally had a gorilla case where I've actually had my hands on one like that. But I've seen many in the wild in different countries.
And are those pretty, not intimidating, but do you?
I mean, yeah, no, it is. I mean, like, so overall, it's a pretty mellow ape. And they're to me, they're far less scary than a chimpanzee, which is way smaller, but way more scary. But they're really chill. But I mean, there's times where, like, that switch can flip quick. I was in the Democratic Republic of the Congo visiting Kahuzi Biega National Park.
Oh, Kahuzi, yeah.
Yeah. And they have, that's probably the best spot. You can see the eastern lowland gorilla, which is the largest of all the gorilla species and subspecies.
Do they have trackers on them, or do you just go out trying to search them?
They don't have like a tracking device on the gorillas, but they actually have like human like trackers that keep an eye on them and keep tabs on them and see just kind of their movement and whereabouts within the forest of these protected reserves, basically. So yeah, they were being tracked essentially. And those guys are on radio with the other guides. And yeah, we went out, we saw them and this big male. I mean, I think just being a new, they know people, male and female. And there's, I mean, that plays a big role into their social construct, just like a lot of other mammals and non-mammals and species, you know. And I think I was just one of, you know, a bigger guy there. And dude, out of nowhere, I'm just like kneeling down, just kind of gently talking about him and saying how, like, I think I was saying something about how, like, he's really comfortable with us and we can be, like, you know, within this proximity of him and it's all good. Out of nowhere, dude, he slams this bush aside and he's looking right at me.
Oh, God.
And I'm talking to camera.
Does your heart stop?
Yeah, dude, I look back and I see he's looking at me, head down, slams his bush aside. I'm like, that's for me. Like, oh, like, I gotta, like, so I, like, you know, I don't want to come off as being like showing any signs of alphaness.
I wish I was your camera guy.
You know? Oh, my God.
I would have egged it on so much.
Oh, bro. It was so, I try to kind of keep crouched and passive and, like, submissive, you know, posturally.
Still looking at him, though?
No. Broke eye contact. Trying to look submissive, but I do kind of stand up and kind of turn away from him, like, trying to show, like, I'm not interested, but kind of keeping, like, the corner of my eye on him. And then I go behind this other guide who he was more, he knew the guides, like he's not worried about them. He's seen them tons of times and knows they're not a threat. And so I kind of like am walking away and going on the other side of him. And the guide like grabs my arm and puts me behind him too. And then he just, the male just goes on about his day. But it was a huge silverback. And for those of you guys listening, you know, silverback is, it's not a species of gorilla. It's just any mature male is a silverback. And so as the big boys grow up, they get that gray back, that silver back.
And they become the alphas.
Potentially. I mean, plenty of silverbacks are not alphas. In fact, most are not alphas, technically. There's just going to be one that is, even though there's multiple silverbacks in a community or a group, you know.
Crazy.
Dude, that was scary. That got my heart. It's not easy to get my heart going. Like, that got my heart going.
Last time we spoke, there was a story of you with a snake that you got bit by one.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any more instances where you were stung, clawed, scratched, or anything where you felt nervous that you had to go to the hospital?
Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is simple. Fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. I do have a few friends who have used GLP-1, and it helps get them on the right path to sustain a healthier lifestyle. It's helped with weight loss and confidence. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game right now, my listeners can get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with my code LIGHTWEIGHT at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use code LIGHTWEIGHT to get $50 off your first month of GLP weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. Get started today.
We all want to feel our best, but let's be real. Some wellness trends are hard to stick with. Taking shots of apple cider vinegar? No thanks. Swallowing giant vitamins? Not for me. Goalie Nutrition is wellness made easy and delicious with their chewable gummies. From apple cider vinegar for digestion support to ashwagandha for stress relief, Goalie's gummies fit effortlessly into your routine. They're made with high quality ingredients, taste amazing, and are packed with essential B vitamins to help you feel your best every day. Apple cider vinegar has been used for centuries as a traditional remedy for digestion and gut health, now in a convenient gummy form. More than just ACV, from ashwagandha for stress relief, plus they're packed with essential vitamins, organic ingredients, and no artificial nonsense. No mixing, measuring, or mess. Just grab, chew, and conquer your day. Made for every lifestyle with a formula that works for you. Plus, they're made in the USA. Loved worldwide. So head to goalie.com now and get America's number one ashwagandha and apple cider vinegar gummies at an exclusive 42% off. Give them a try, risk-free. Backed by their money-back guarantee. Because wellness should be simple, effective, and delicious. Don't wait. Visit goalie.com today.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Hospital.
The only time I really felt I had to go to the hospital was, well, I guess a couple times. I mean, one was, I got bit by a copperhead in the face when I was 17. I think I told you about that, right?
Yeah.
I needed antivenom. Like, I was hospitalized. I was in there for a few nights.
Yeah.
And I was a dumb kid, too. And so the only other time I really thought I needed, like, a little bit of help medically was my freaking cat. My cat, Blue. This might have been a little before or after last time we did an episode, and he saw another like outdoor cat that wasn't mine outside on the other side of a screen door. Like the sliding glass door wasn't shut, so he could like really kind of see this cat and smell it and all the stuff. Lost his mind. Just, I don't even think he was connected to reality in any way, shape, or form. So he misdirected his aggression to his best friend, Willie.
Oh, no.
Who had just come up to just see, hey, what's going on? And just chilling. And, like, Willie loves Blue. Like, they love each other. And Blue misdirected his aggression, starts slapping and hissing and biting at Willie. So I have to pick up Blue. Willie's trying to climb up my leg, and I'm trying to, like, keep Willie on the ground. Because Willie's like, yo, what the fuck, bro? Like, fuck you. Like, dude. You know, he's freaking out. And then while I'm holding Blue, who has never showed any sign of aggression whatsoever, bites the shit out of my finger, my index finger, this finger.
Oh.
And, oh my God, it got so swollen, infected with those cat teeth. Those cat bites, they have such long canines for their size. I mean, it's only this long, but when you get a puncture of a contaminated, dirty cat mouth all under there and right next to the joint, it was so inflamed and so painful. So I didn't go to a hospital, but I called my doctor the next day. I'm like, listen, man, I need a prescription for, you know, a nice antibiotic, and I knew what I wanted to do for that, and he agreed, luckily, and then I was like, dude, also, honestly, I need some pain medication. Like, I can't even think. Like, I've been drinking some whiskey trying to, like, get this thing to go away, and, like, I don't really have pain meds here. Like, can you please just help me out just for a couple of days? Like, I can't even freaking think, dude. I can't do anything. My finger is just so inflamed and so painful.
As a practicing professional vet, you can't write anything for yourself as a human, right?
Yeah, like that'd be pretty illegal. Yeah.
Do you think it went so deep it hit bone?
Oh, I mean, if it didn't, it was within less than a millimeter from it. I mean, your finger's only so much soft tissue anyway, so your bone right there. I mean, and his fang went deep into it. I mean, it was, I'll show you a picture, man. It was nasty.
Wow. When you worked in caves with bats.
Yes.
Are you worried at all about the feces in there as far as like getting into your lungs and it being poisonous for you?
No, I mean, I wasn't spending like a crazy amount of time in there. And like where I've seen bats in caves, they've been pretty big open areas. And so like a lot of those gases also, they get, they're kind of warmer as they're like kind of festering and everything. And so they get above they go higher up in the cave.
Yeah.
And so anywhere I've been, like, yeah, it might be a little stinky, but it's never been like so, you know, full of ammonia and whatever. Then it's, I'm worried that it's toxic or, yeah, no.
Got it.
Yeah.
So you have your book, World Wild Vet. What made you want to write a book at this point in your career? Because you do have crazy experiences. I mean, you've traveled all over the world. You go to countries that I don't even know how to pronounce. And it's just a collection of your stories of your travels. Why did you want to put these together for people to learn?
I mean, I think one of the biggest motivations was just to share my enthusiasm and get people like, I love what I do and I love what I've gotten to do. And I love sharing these stories. And I feel like if people can hear it firsthand from somebody that's had like really close encounters and, genuine firsthand experiences, they can get maybe a different perception of some of these animals. Because I also love some of the misunderstood animals. I've got a chapter about sharks. You know, I talk a lot about snakes and things that a lot of people might have irrational fears of without really having any, you know, personal experience with. And if they can just, you know, learn a little bit about more about them and why they're important, why I love them, you know, maybe can help change some attitudes about it. That was one of the biggest things, but you know, it's just fun to share these stories, you know, I mean, they're crazy stories and like, it's fun to share what these other parts of the world are like and share what conservation's like in these other areas and what people are like and what traveling is like and it can be an absolute shit show, you know, with some of the traveling and even just some of the vet care in some of these places. So, to be honest, it wasn't something, writing a book, I mean, wasn't something I was planning on doing relatively this early, I guess, in my career. Mm-hmm. I thought it'd be something I'd do kind of towards the middle or the end, maybe. But I also realized I had a lot of stories. And to be honest, my agent was like, no, we need to do this. Like, you have a book in you. Like, look at all the stuff you've done. Like, let's shop around. Like, let's just see, you know, if it's something you're into. And I was like, yeah, I'd love to do it. So we just kind of went for it. And it was a freaking awesome process. I really enjoyed it.
What was the best thing that came out of it?
That's a great question.
Because you did Good Morning America for promoting it, right?
I did. Maybe I did do a Zoom with them. I did a bunch of. I hired PR even for that. Like, because it was the toughest thing was we released it October 2020. And I had a whole book tour planned. Like, I was going to be traveling all over the country, like doing in person, like readings and visits and, you know, promo and everything. And obviously, you know, that was a terrible time and I couldn't do any of it. So all the PR and press I'm doing, I wanted some help, but it was mostly just pretty much entirely virtual.
Right.
And so I'm just doing Zoom calls here. I went to a couple studios for some of the bigger shows, but like, yeah, the promoting it was really tough.
And then out of all the stories in there, which one holds the closest to you?
I mean, the Australia one, that's where I really found like my calling, or at least what I wanted to do, and really like honed in on like what my vision was and what I wanted that to look like. And I've been walking down that path, and I saw, you know, now, you know, 17 years ago at this point. So that one's like, that's like really deep in my heart. Like, that's like my core, right? And then one more I have to say, like, I mean, I love them all. Like, I really do. They're all such special things. And this book doesn't include so many other special things. And I just couldn't write it, you know, it didn't make sense to write a 600-page book. But is the rhino chapter about rhino conservation. So wildlife conservation is different all around the world. And animals, you know, and habitats are threatened for lots of different reasons. But the reasons that play into rhino conservation are really unique. Because of the value of the rhino horn that they're poached for. And so, I mean, it's a war over there, you know, and there's big money going into poaching those animals, and the costs and implications of what it takes to secure and protect those animals are so substantial. And when you can protect them, you secondarily, as a byproduct, protect everything, because it just takes so much to protect them. And if they're protected in a habitat, everything else is for sure going to be good. And the people that are involved in rhino conservation, I mean, they put their lives on the line and they're so passionate about it, and they risk so much to do something that they just believe is so important and so iconic for Africa and important for its wildlife and its habitats and just, you know, the core of what Africa is. And So that's something that I find very touching and is very special to me too.
What makes the horn so valuable? Is it used for medicine?
You could say, yeah, it's used for, you know, quote unquote traditional Chinese medicine. And I'm not knocking on traditional Chinese medicine, but if you look back at like historical texts and whatnot, it didn't appear like it was, but now they're calling it traditional. And I'm talking about 2000 years ago. It didn't look like it actually was authentic, true, thousands year old traditional Chinese medicine, as far as I know. But they call it that now, and it's not, there's nothing medical it can do for you. It's just keratin. So it's the same product, you know, same thing, same tissue as hair and fingernails and stuff. They'll sell it to cure impotence. They'll sell it to cure the flu. The Vietnamese prime minister said it cured his cancer. And a lot of these places, you know, people that sell it, they cut in actual medication. So this guy wants it to cure his impotence, but it actually has Viagra in it. But he thinks this rhino horn is the jam, you know, like it worked, you know.
Right.
So it's really unfortunate. So that's one component. And the other component is it's a status symbol. It's a sign of wealth and riches and money, you know. People buy status symbols all over the world. Like every culture has their own versions of it, and people like to, you know, show their stuff off, like whatever. But unfortunately, they do that with rhino horn and the stuff. So rhino horn, just to give you like a little bit of an idea, when some volume of rhino horn leaves the country, it's 30,000 to 60,000 U.S. dollar per kilogram, and so a big horn could be several kilograms if you get a whole horn. The price would probably be even more expensive if that whole horn's intact and somebody wants to buy it like that. But in its final destination, which is Southeast Asia and Southern China, Southeast China, whatnot, it can be up to 200,000 per kilogram. So one big horn could be $750,000, you know, maybe more.
The horns never grow back.
No, they do grow back. So just like keratin and other parts of the body or other animals, just like us, our fingernails and hair constantly grows. So that actually also makes it very unique, because it's one of those animal products that you could farm it. And that's not something I'd want to do, or something that like I hoped, you know, the world would start doing. But at this point, it actually would be awesome if we could start farming them, trim the horns as we do to protect them, and then sell that and turn that into a business. Because if the demand, it's hard for that to disappear. And it's unfortunately, it's still there. And I wish it wasn't, but it is. But yeah, it's not like tiger teeth. You have to, you know, the animal's not going to live without its teeth. Elephant tusks, same thing.
I didn't even know tiger teeth was a market.
Oh yeah, yeah. A lot of tiger parts are. A lot. The claws, the teeth, all kinds of stuff. The fur, even some of the soft tissue things and the bladder and stuff like that. I mean, tiger fat, all kinds of crap. But yeah, I mean, that's a big reason why there's so few tigers in the wild. It's because of poaching for the parts. You know, gorilla hands. People want the hands. They want the head. They want all these different parts of the animal. Or they just want it for bushmeat, a lot of these different species, including a lot of big primates like chimps. Or they want to take the babies. But anyways, point being, it's one of the few that you actually could harvest, if you want to say, and then the animal doesn't have to be sacrificed. But they just want to go and poach them and kill them. And some people want to see blood on the horn. You know, it's a nasty thing, and it's big money. And it's a real challenge and a real scary thing to protect those guys.
In your travels, what's the most exotic meat that you've tried that was native to the region?
Oh gosh, I mean, I guess some weird insects for sure.
Human?
They only do that in the Southern Hemisphere.
Oh really?
Yeah. So like only in South Africa.
Tastier in the South?
No. Oh, it was more like, to me, it would taste like raccoon meat. You know, like.
Wait, you tasted human meat?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
No. Oh.
I hate you.
No. I mean, if I did, I wouldn't tell you. Yeah. So, no, I've never eaten anything. I mean, I don't know, like, it's in the Philippines, and there's this croc breeding facility, and they get back to conservation, too, as they should. So, crocodile, I guess. And
I've had alligator.
Yeah.
Florida.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Are you familiar with Boneyard, Alaska? No.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, dude.
Have you ever done...
I want to go there so bad. How crazy does that look?
It's insane. Can you explain to the audience what it is?
Yeah. So, okay. I learned about this guy on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Yes.
Right? And so that's the first time it sounded like... Yeah. And it sounded like that's the first time he was doing talk to anybody big about it. And this guy has like a relatively small geographic area. Is it like, what's it, half a mile or something, or a mile? Or
he bought it just to live.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy, he was in oil or something. Or
in Texas, moved to Alaska, bought a piece of property, and on the property is thousands.
Thousands. They've gotten thousands of all these different prehistoric animals that actually they didn't think they would find there.
We're even in Alaska at all.
Yeah, like not even close. Like all these, a lot of woolly mammoth. And all these, some other big mammals. You have like
saber-tooth tigers.
Yeah.
Jinx.
Yeah.
You want me a Coke? Kiss? What?
Yeah.
Huh?
Dude, it looks just like, because you know I've got I love bones. We've done silly videos with
some of my skulls.
Yeah, you're
the boner guy.
The boner guy. The boner guy. Boner is a bone lover.
Bone lover.
For those
boner.
Wondering. Oh my God, that was fun. I want to bring that back. But it looks freaking amazing, dude. Like, what a trip. I mean, could you? I'd be so stoked if I found any intact big. Like, imagine finding a mastodon radius, or like a humerus, or a femur, or like just some big ass. Like, I mean, oh my God, that'd be such a trip, dude. And so it's all right there.
All these skeletons are fully intact. What were they doing there? Did they all die there? They were just living there?
That's a mystery, right? I mean, because like the fact that they're fully intact makes you think like, okay, they probably weren't washed there, you know, like moved by water, because they're all intact. Like, what got them all there? So there's some huge crack in the earth and they all, like, I don't know. I don't get it, dude. It's some weird thing. Or it's aliens, right?
Right.
Aliens do all the weird. They did the pyramids. They, you know, they did the boneyard.
They bring all,
they're like, we're going to fuck with them. And take all these animals from, you know, Eurasia or whatever, and we're just going to throw them here.
But all the animals there must have died, like, almost instantly, right?
I mean, because they're all fully, they are mostly fully intact, right? They're like
a lot of them are fully intact, full skeletons. Like, they're not like crushed and broken.
Still, why was there so many? And it's not like you go back to prehistoric times. I'm assuming these animals aren't just like shoulder to shoulder with each other, like with how biodense it is, you know? Like, but yeah, I mean, but it's fair to say, yeah. It probably was something that was pretty quick.
Have you ever done dinosaur excavation?
No. It looks awesome.
That's your next TV show.
Actually, okay, you know what? So one of my buddies, who is, he does a lot of underwater photography. He's a captain. And this is kind of funny. He's currently right now in Alaska. He runs boats and he's a captain for this company that does like tourism. And they go out and they look for orcas and all kinds of, you know, sea otters. And he had a crazy viral video of a sea otter that jumped on a boat trying to avoid...
A shark.
Was that it?
Or an orca.
An orca or something. Or maybe it was a seal.
That was your buddy's video?
Dude, he had this super viral video like 6 or 7 years ago. And I think it was a sea otter that jumped on his boat. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. That's him. That's him.
Yeah, I think he was avoiding an orca.
Yeah, dude. It was something crazy like that. I feel ridiculous. I can't even remember it. But it was such a cool video. So John's his name. And we were going on this dive trip and we had to bail on because one of the two boat engines failed and we were outside of Coast Guard waters. So if we failed and we're out of that, like we're not in a good place, you know.
So they're not going to save you?
No, you got to be within that radius or within that distance or whatever from the shore, basically. And the Bahamas doesn't have anything, you know, quite like that. So we if the other engine pooped, we'd be kind of pretty fucked. So we ended up instead going to the Peace River the next day. And the Peace River is this river that runs across, you know, that part of like southern Florida or whatever. And we went to the spot that is literally riddled with mineral, like fossils. Like we found all these shark teeth. We found some megalodon teeth, man.
Wow.
Yes, bro. And like that tells us that, I mean, you're getting animal parts that were at least, they couldn't be any less than 4 million years. And then you get newer as well. So we're getting like, I found some, what I presume are mastodon, part of the carpal bones, like the wrist bones. Found a bunch of dugong ribs. You know what a dugong is?
Is it like a whale?
No, it is it's a marine mammal. You know what a manatee is?
Yeah.
So the dugong is like the Australia, Southern Pacific version of it. And they might be in other oceans too. I think they're actually in the Indian Ocean too. In Africa too. Yeah, they are. So it's like a manatee. So all these mineralized dugong ribs. A lot of other shark teeth. We found some tiger shark teeth, bull shark teeth. Oh, we found some really old shark teeth. Another species that's actually even older than a megalodon. And then he found what looked like, I think, a wolf molar or premolar. It was really beautifully intact. It was really nice. And all kinds of other stuff. I mean, I shipped myself home like two like boxes. I mean, I brought home like 150 bones, parts and parts of bones. It was just awesome. So I guess I've done that.
Is a situation like Jurassic Park real, where you can take the DNA of an animal that's extinct, fill it in with another animal that's on this earth, like an elephant? Have you seen, do you know Forrest Galante?
Yeah.
They're bringing back woolly mammoths on a certain island.
That's what I was going to say.
So that's possible.
Yeah. It looks like it's possible. I mean, technologically, it seems possible. If they have intact DNA, I mean, it seems like that's something they could do.
That's crazy. And just to close it out, what's one situation with an animal that you felt almost an out-of-body experience where you were like, I can't believe I'm here. How did I get here at this point? Because I feel like so many people relate to you as running around the neighborhood, going out in the woods, trying to catch different bugs and geckos, lizards, maybe they see a snake. That was you. Yeah. And you made it your career. You're this incredible, you're a practicing veterinarian, the show, the book, you've done so much. What's one situation that just really makes you feel like you made it?
I mean, out of body, I've had a few of those in the wild, like you're by yourself. And God, that's a great question, man. I've got like a few things floating around. I mean, one of the biggest like full circle, like holy shit moments was the first time I was on a big TV show at the time. So Kris Jenner had the Kris Jenner show. I can't remember the exact name. It was like the Kris Jenner show, something like talk show. And they reached out and I didn't have much to go off of media wise. I don't recall how they found me. And they're like, hey, we'd love to have an animal expert guest. Would you come on? And so I was like, cool. And so I had six animals. It was like two segments. Like I was on TV for 13 minutes. Like to this day, it's still one of the longest I've ever been on a talk show. That was a long time. And so I first come out with this baby kangaroo and I'm like pretty shy. And I'm like, oh man, this is crazy. Like all these cameras, I'm on the studio set. Like this is nuts. There's a live audience. Like it was like just kind of crazy to me. And then the next animal, I had a kookaburra. Which
What's
is
that?
The you know the Australian bird that go brrr, ah, that was
can
terrible.
Can you do that sound one more time?
Brrr, ah,
I feel like I'm in the zoo and I hear it from like three.
That was bad. I guarantee you've heard it. It's like this big kingfisher looking kind of bird.
I'm sure
that is.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, there's this big Australian kingfisher thing that has this really iconic call that I'm not good at impersonating. I can do some other animal noise, but I guess not that. So, and then the third animal was this like 7-foot alligator, and a couple of the handlers bring it out to the stage and they just set it right on the stage. And I stand up, I'm like, all right. So I go and jump this thing to restrain it. And like right when I sat down on it and I've got my hands, you know, I'm holding its neck and just, you know, restraining it, keeping good hand on it, it like hit me. And then it was just like, oh shit. Like that was 2013. So it was only 7 years after or whatever, or seven or so years after, you know, when I realized that was what I wanted to do. I'm like, oh my God, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm looking at cameras. I'm looking at a live audience. I'm on the set. I'm on Kris Jenner's show. NeNe Leakes, who was, she's one of the Real Housewives of Atlanta. She was hilarious. I love NeNe, dude. She was so funny. She ran off the stage. I'm like, oh my God, like, this is real. This is freaking crazy. And then, like, then my energy came. And, like, if you see me with the kangaroo and I'm all shy compared to me with the alligator, it's like two completely different people. Like, it just hit me. And it was so just amazing and wild and cool and crazy. And it was really fun to be able to, like, share my passion and some information about these animals in this way on this fun show. That was a big moment. And then, like, other ones are just, like, being in the wild, like, I for a second I thought I was like atheist when I was learning about biology, because like it made so much more sense than anything religious I'd ever learned before that point, you know, and all that I just couldn't wrap my head around. And then like I was like, the science makes sense, it's all in the science, you know. And then when you get out and you're in the jungle and you're all on the other side of the world and you're hearing and smelling and seeing everything going on around you, and then you happen upon one of your favorite like snake species, and it was one of the big reasons you came all the way out there to see, you really wanted to see this gorgeous, you know, green tree pit viper, whatever, there's something like spiritual about it. So like when I'm like in the bush like that, like I feel some kind of deeper connection that I can't explain, but I just feel so at peace and just so one and so like amazing. And it might all just be just endorphins in my head, like obviously none of us really know at the end of the day. But moments like that are super duper special.
When you're out there on the other side of the world by yourself in the bush, are you scared?
No, like if I go, like I'm aware of what's native to that area, and like I'm going usually in like protected areas where there's probably not any like human conflict or like human, you know, GU gorillas or that kind of like sketchiness. So like not super, but like, yeah, I mean, you know, I'll go out at night sometimes in the bush in Southeast Asia, and technically, yeah, forest elephants are native there. They can be super aggressive. Like I wouldn't want to stumble across one. I'm hoping I would hear it before it hears me, but I don't know, you know. So like, yeah, there's scary stuff, and I'm trying to go, you know, work with or, you know, see or visit whatever, like what could, you know, dangerous animals, venomous snakes, stuff like that. So like, yeah, there's things to, you know, be aware of. You want to keep your head on a swivel and be smart and everything, but I'm not like walking around like frightened. Like I think if I was, I wouldn't go. It'd be too scary. Like you're by yourself, it's at night, you're alone. Like that'd be scary if you're freaking out, but I love that stuff.
I recently found out that a lot of Man vs. Wild with Bear Grylls was staged.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah, even...
I mean, I might have found out after the fact, but, like, yeah, I think all of it was pretty much staged. Like
even the volcanoes that they had smoking in the background, they had smoke machines there.
I didn't know that.
That is what was, like, so eye-opening that they just curated this entire situation. Meanwhile, I'm going out thinking I can go live in Africa for a week.
I mean, people do, and they could. Like, you could if you were, you know, if you learned how. But, like, and he does know how. I mean, don't get me wrong. The guy, he could do that if he wanted to.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, no doubt. He for sure could. But, yeah, I mean, he's sleeping in, you know,
in the hotel
at night. He's sleeping in a hotel. He goes out. They get their shots. He does his hunting or whatever he's doing. But it's, yeah, he's not actually doing that.
When you're doing your show, obviously you're educating people about the animals. Are you aware of all of this in that moment, or do you kind of do the voiceovers in post after you do your research on the animal to like double check that everything you say is correct, and after talking to the experts, like getting other people's advice and input, how do you go about explaining what the animal is?
Well, first of all, everything was CGI'd. So
you're such a liar.
No, I mean, yeah, so like, yeah, anytime, like, even whether it was for the show or if I'm going on a talk show and I'm talking about, you know, these four or five animals, like, I have walking knowledge on them. I could talk about any one of them for sure just from what's in my head. But, like, yeah, a lot of times, like, I'll do some homework the night before and I'll be like, you know, is there any new information about them or new scientific reveals, or is there some really neat, interesting facts that I really want to like get clear in my mind on what the story is. So like, yeah, I'll often like brush up, but I mean, there's a lot of times where like things just happen that you can't expect. Like I didn't know I was going to find a big ass Bengal monitor on the road that I wanted to catch and talk about. So we're just going to go from there. So it's kind of on the fly. And to answer your question about the voiceover and stuff, like, yeah, like some of the interviews a few of them just for more for the sake of editing and post and whatnot. I had to do some, like, you know, some on the fly, you know, interview kind of things that we pretended we were where we were, and it was really in Malibu, and we pretended like we were back in Africa or wherever we, you know, the episode was. But that was just, that was more for just getting the story to, like, all make sense and just for the flow of the episode. It wasn't for anything like fake or whatever. Like, everything you saw was real, and a lot of it, you know, most of it was just like walking knowledge, you know.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, guys, go check out Evan's book, World Wild Vet. Do you have an Audible version for those of us that can't
read?
I did.
I read it myself.
Oh, great.
Yeah, man.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool. So it's available Amazon, Audible,
all
everywhere
over.
Else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You easily find it. Evan Goes Wild. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course. And then we have your YouTube channel coming out soon.
Dude, I'm going to get back on that. I am. I'm going to get a new laptop. I'm going to start filming, start producing.
Hell yeah. Amazing.
Oh, man. But yeah, I do have a channel. I've got a lot of content up. I mean, if you've not seen it, you'll see a lot of cool stuff. Different surgeries, working with different wildlife, all kinds of stuff. Please, I mean, check it out. You'll like it.
You're a superhuman. Thank you for being here.
You are, man. Thank you so much, dude. This is always a blast, Joe. I appreciate it.
Lightweights, out.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure, dude.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.